Next week, a look at what the community is doing to help their new neighbors and why city officials are asking the state and federal government for help. The migrants arriving in Whitewater represent a tiny fraction of people crossing the southern border into the U.S. In December alone, some 300,000 people from Central America and elsewhere reportedly did so. 2.5 million people in 2023. The crush of people crossing the border is described as a humanitarian crisis. Meanwhile, 3 million pending asylum cases before U.S. immigration courts means migrants gaining entry at the border wait years for their hearings, all the while living and, after a time, legally working in the U.S. Aaron Barbado is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. She recently visited the border, and she joins us now. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I understand that you were in Tijuana.
Mm-hmm. I was in Tijuana in December to take a close look at what is actually happening on the border and the policies that are in place there right now through the Department of Homeland Security, and how people, really looking at how people can access our asylum system and the new policies that are in place.
What did you see at the border?
So we visited a number of shelters that were housing people who are in transit attempting to seek refuge in the U.S. In order to do so right now, they need to apply for an appointment with an app, a CBP One app. And many of the people we met with have been waiting for months in order to access that appointment. But it's our government is encouraging people to go through a regular route to enter the U.S. to seek protection. But it is causing a lot of people to wait very long in Mexico before they can even access our asylum system.
Why are so many millions of people wanting to gain entry into the U.S.?
I mean, that's a good question. I think when you look at it, we live in a great country, and people are suffering all over the world. And so if we were living in a country where no one wanted to come, that would probably be an issue. But we're living in a country where we do have opportunity for people. And people's lives are in danger in certain countries. Not everybody coming will qualify for asylum, but many of them do.
What policies have changed allowing this kind of more recent crush?
So I'm not sure if the policies have changed. It's difficult in the past few years to compare numbers, considering that the border was closed under Title 42 for so long. And now that the border is, it's not open, but it's functioning under what's called Title 8, which is a law that governs our asylum process, allowing people to seek asylum at our southern border, which they can't really do right now unless they have a CBP One appointment. One other change that potentially has some validity in helping people access the asylum system in a more regular manner is the opening of these Seguridad Mobil offices in Colombia, Guatemala, and Costa Rica. And it will allow certain people with strong cases to apply for refugee status there and then fly to the U.S. And so it could take some of the pressure off the border as well as our asylum system.
Meanwhile, though, there's so much discussion around this, and the numbers of people crossing into the United States. What happens if, through some executive or legislative action, the borders close? Is that even possible?
It seems that it is possible, potentially, whether our president has the ability under the laws to close the border, I think, is a question that will be litigated in court. Our laws say that people have the right to seek asylum in the U.S., as well as to enter the border if they have an employment-based visa or even a visitor visa to visit a family. So it could have really harsh consequences on separating families and also putting more people in danger. But that may happen.
Short of closing the border, does it seem likely that highly restrictive laws will be put in place at this time?
I know that they've been discussed. I'm not sure that they've ever worked before. More deterrence, more enforcement doesn't seem to deter people to necessarily come from the U.S., and I think there might be a better way to look at a more humanitarian solution.
Why do people wait so long to have their cases heard?
The backlog within our administrative law system and the immigration courts is very long. And so people, even with the strongest asylum cases, are waiting years in order to access the benefits that they are entitled to under our laws. And so it makes the system very difficult to manage. People may miss their court hearings because the court hearings get changed all of the time. And people don't have an attorney when they're in the process unless they can afford one or find a pro bono one. So it's a really difficult system to navigate. And it's not going quickly for people who are eligible.
Once they get to that hearing, how likely is it that people seeking asylum will be granted it?
You know, the percentages differ where you are in the U.S. The numbers, the judges' percentages of approvals are available across the country. So it's hard to say exactly, but it's difficult. It's not, the percentages are not high for the people that receive asylum. If you're represented by an attorney, you're more likely to receive asylum because you maybe know what the law is, what the judge is looking for based on your story. But it's a very complicated, difficult process, and people do not just aren't just given papers. It's it takes years, it takes months to prepare. It's a very difficult process.
But meanwhile, people who are awaiting that hearing, they can get authorization to work legally.
Yes, normally, depending on what process they're going through, but you have to wait a number of months, 6 months to a year normally, to obtain a work permit to work in the U.S. Once you have that, you're here with authorization, and you can work, you can get a driver's license, you can get a social security number, but you're not here permanently. You can't leave the U.S. You don't have access to public benefits. You are here temporarily, and maybe it's for years waiting to access the asylum system. But the work permit does allow people to participate in society and support themselves.
All right, we need to leave it there. Erin Barbato, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me. They need to have a work permit to do so. And if you don't have a work permit and a foreign identification. So we have a kiddo from Afghanistan right now who got asylum, but he doesn't have a passport. So he has to wait to get his work permit, which is going to take 3 to 6 months in order to even get to work, even though the law says he can work. So it's just a very broken system.
Yeah, it's really broken.
Mm-hmm. And the amount of, probably 25% of my time is just applying for work permits. I'm like, this is not a good use of anybody's time.
Yeah.
And then, it's backlogging everything with immigration. And
well, any idea how many billions of dollars it would take to throw at this to fix it?
There's not, in terms of supporting communities, there's really no money that's thrown at it already. So besides some support for people who come over as refugees, but beyond that, everyone's on their own. The police chief from Whitewater is fascinating.
Yeah, I think so.
He called me a year ago, I don't know if I told you this, and asked me if I could do some trainings with his police officers. He seems to be really thoughtful, so
yeah.
I'm glad you're covering that.
Yeah, it's a nice story.
Yeah, and you don't always get that. So
right.
He's trying to come up with a humanitarian solution to an issue he can't manage on his own. So anyway, thanks for
all
your
right.
work.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, congrats to your daughter. I feel like she might be president one day.
I don't think so. I don't think she'd like